Good evening. This is Your Legal Rights, and I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight is marijuana, from the jail to the workplace. My guest tonight is the premier marijuana expert, criminal defense attorney Bruce Margolin, author of The Margolin Guide to Marijuana Law, the most comprehensive and yet easy-to-read explanation of the California and federal marijuana laws that exist today. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. And again, that's 415-841-4134. Mr. Margolin, let me welcome you to Your Legal Rights.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being on here. I hope to enlighten your audience and give them some information that might be helpful to them. And what I'm always down for is keeping people out of trouble, because knowing your rights and the laws is the best way to do that.
Well, thank you. And let's start with this. A lot of people are aware that the laws regarding marijuana have changed significantly over the last 2 years. Let's talk about some of those specific laws that have changed, what people can and can't do. The first thing that comes to mind is simple possession. Can you talk us a little bit about what was the law and where we are today with simple possession by adults?
Well, simple possession of marijuana up to now was basically only an infraction in California, so that didn't really shake the earth up too much, but it changed the complexion and the attitude towards marijuana greatly by making it totally legal. That means legal for adults over 21 that possess, purchase, grow, and even non-medical as well, for up to also makes it legal for them to transport up to an ounce. So you can have an ounce of marijuana legally as an adult over 21. You can possess it, you can transport it, and you can actually give away an ounce as long as there's no compensation, and that's all legal in California now, which is quite different than it has been in the past. So, but however, there are conclusions to that and exceptions to that, and that's a number of ones that actually exist in the code under Prop 64. For example, smoke marijuana in public, which is kind of shocking, and that's one of the things I'm concerned about, because let me give you a little backstory on that. Right now, under the law, the only way you can smoke marijuana legally is in your own residence. That means if you own an apartment or live in a condo and they don't authorize it, the landlord doesn't authorize it, you can't smoke it there. You can't smoke it in public. So you already left, there are no places to smoke, and that's one of the things I've been fighting for, to get these on-site consumption licenses for dispensaries and other lounges so people can have access to that.
Let me interrupt you for a moment. If I understand you correctly, are we at a point where the legalization of marijuana is intersecting with local ordinances that might not allow smoking, perhaps, of tobacco or other substances in public?
Bottom line is you can't smoke public based on Prop 64, period. Not local regulations necessarily. It's Russian Prop 64 specifically says they cannot be smoked in public. And this is an infraction. It's a $100 fine. Smoking marijuana or marijuana products in a location where smoking tobacco is prohibited. Smoking just marijuana products in any public place is also a $100 fine plus penalty assessment. You can't smoke in public. You can't smoke marijuana or marijuana products within 1,000 feet of a school, daycare, or other places like that. For example, youth centers where children are present, daycare centers. It goes on and on and on. There are some exceptions, but generally that's the rule. Also, there's issues about whether you can travel with marijuana, okay? It's very important for people to understand that as well. Possession of an open container or open package of marijuana or marijuana products while driving, operating, or riding in a passenger, that's a passenger's compartment of a motor vehicle, is a $250 fine. And that $250 fine becomes a lot more when you talk about penalty assessments. It's about three times that amount, so it's not really something that not to be concerned about.
So if I got a simple fine of $250, I might be out of pocket $700 or $800.
Exactly. A $100 fine goes up to $500. So $250 probably goes up to maybe $700, $800, or maybe $1,000. I can't multiply. It's about almost five times as much. different penalty assessments. It's crazy. They keep adding on penalty assessments, and penalty assessments to people's fines, and they actually add up to a lot more than the fine themselves.
Well, the lawmakers have a budget to balance, and there's not a whole lot of people standing in line making sure that criminal assessments, even for less serious crimes, that we're not overtaxing people when they can sin tax just as they would with alcohol or tobacco. But let me interrupt you here. We have David on the line from Pescadero. David, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hello, David.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, how are you? This is David Collins. You saved my life. I just want to thank you.
I did, myself, me, myself, and
yes,
I.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Thank you. It's so kind to hear that. Where was that case out of? Where was it?
It was in Kansas. You found my lawyer, Tom Bass.
Wonderful. I'm so glad I helped you. I'm glad you're out.
Yeah, dude. You hooked me up. It was like 15 years ago, 20 years ago, something. It was a long time. It was 16 years ago. And I probably would have been in prison for 5 to 8 years if it wasn't for you.
Well, you're so kind to call me up. I appreciate it. I love to hear those stories because, you know, I'm down for the cause. And I've been very fortunate. I have clients like you that have good karma. That's probably what it's all about. It's all God's will. We know that, right?
Yeah, I do know that. And thank you so much, man. And I just really appreciate your life's work. Thanks for helping everybody out.
Hey, David, let me ask you while you're on the line, if you don't mind telling us, what are you doing today?
I'm a union electrician. I'm driving home.
So this is a position that you wouldn't have, a position in life, but for the assistance you had in that case way back when in Kansas.
Yeah, and you know, in all honesty, like, I was arrested in Kansas. I didn't know anybody there. I just knew Bruce Margolin's name because he ran for governor against Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I tracked him down, and he found my guy in Kansas, which really helped me out. He did all the legwork, which helped me out. And what a great guy. I'm just very grateful.
Kansas is a very dangerous place to be, too. I got a news for you. They say that's the last place in the country that's going to legalize marijuana, I heard.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure of it. And they were planning on putting me away for a long time, and I just, the one thing I did is I just took full responsibility, and they never had that. Everybody fought it, and they let me out with 20 days shock time. It was unbelievable.
It sounds like it really changed the path you were on, and I'm glad it worked out for you. David, thank you for joining us.
Yeah. 26 pounds, and I got 20 days. It's pretty awesome.
I'm not recommending that for anybody on the line, but I'm glad it worked out for you. Thank you, and thank you for joining us.
Bruce, take it easy, brother. Love you.
God bless you. Thank you for the call. I really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much.
And Karen from Berkeley, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening, Mr. Margolin and the guest, host. So I want to make a statement. If you look on any piece of legal tender or money, a dollar bill, a $5 bill, a $10 bill, a $100 bill, a nickel, a dime, a quarter, since the mint started making money, it says and it's printed, "In God we trust." And when you trust in God, that means you believe him and you believe in what God says. And so that's on every, now the courthouses, you used to have to put your hand on the Bible when you went to court, swear to God to tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And so I make the premise that the federal government is in violation of its own belief system, because if it's printing "In God we trust" on every piece of money, and we trust in God, and God said that he made every green herb and grass and shrub that grows all over the whole earth, and that its seed is unto itself, and unto us it shall be as meat, and God said it was good. God said grass was good. In the Bible.
I'm totally down for it. And what about the Constitution saying we have a right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness?
In God we trust on every piece of money.
I know, I get it.
Every piece of money we touch, and every courthouse. So, and even the presidents have to put their hand on the Lincoln Bible when they're being sworn in as president. So if the Bible is the cornerstone of Western civilization and the basis for the jurisprudence system in this country, then what is in the Bible is what we trust. And if we trust in God, and God said grass is good, then there you go.
You're absolutely right. I'm down.
The federal government has no jurisdiction over God.
Okay, from your lips to God's ears, that's all I can tell you. We should people get off their case up at the federal level and get with it, you know? It's ridiculous.
Karen, thank you for joining us.
Because the federal government is violating its own belief system by printing "In God we trust" on every piece of money.
Well, unfortunately, the laws are only as good.
They have no jurisdiction.
Karen, I just want to finish it by saying the laws are only as good as those who interpret it and those who enforce it. Unfortunately, the laws don't mean anything except those who decide how they're interpreted and how they're enforced. That's what we deal with in this country.
Karen, thank you for joining us. And we've talked about marijuana being legal. Let's talk about some limitations on what we can do with marijuana. For example, what is the current penalty for possession for sale?
It's a misdemeanor now, unless you have some serious priors. It's a straight misdemeanor, punishable up to 6 months and a $500 fine, which is a lot different than it was before we passed Prop 64, which was punishable by 16, 2 or 3 years in prison, okay? So it made a big difference in that regard. And also, the reality is that the prosecution of marijuana cases has gone way down, thank goodness. There's been a whole change in the whole environment regarding marijuana prosecutions, all right? The cops are not motivated any longer, apparently, because it's only a misdemeanor. They don't get that, as they say, the fruit of the poison tree, putting people in jail. And I've had cases where hundreds of pounds are involved, people walking out with no time. It's a wonderful change at the moment. How it's going to pan out later on, we don't know. But right now, that's the story. Now, there are some places up in Northern California to the eastern coast of it that they're being tough on possession for sale cases. As a matter of fact, in cultivation cases, which is also just a misdemeanor, they sometimes charge people with conspiracies so they can develop that into a felony conviction. So because if two people join together to commit a misdemeanor, it could be a conspiracy, and a conspiracy could be a felony. So watch out in Northern California in the eastern portion of the state.
And for those who aren't listening, conspiracy is really any time that two people agree to commit a crime and somebody starts taking steps toward that.
That's right.
So even a very minor thing can result in a felony conspiracy, can it not?
It can, although they don't go after people unless you have a lot of weight and a lot of cultivation going on. Some of these places in Northern California, on the eastern coast of it, are very upset by the Prop 64. They just can't believe that this bread and butter for the cops has been taken away from them. And they're just, you know, they want to get revenge, so they're trying that. But it's only a very few places, thank goodness, and hopefully it doesn't spread over the state.
And again, you're listening to our topic tonight is marijuana from the jail to the workplace. My guest tonight is Bruce Margolin from Beverly Hills, a renowned marijuana law and criminal defense attorney and author of the Margolin Guide to State of California and United States Federal Marijuana Laws. If you have questions for my guest, you can call us at toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. So, Mr. Margolin, talk a little bit about some of the things that you shouldn't be doing.
All right, let's finish that, because it's really important for folks to know what's going down, all right?
Absolutely.
First of all, you can possess it. And et cetera. We're talking about let's clue in on just possession, okay? So for adults over 21, they can possess an ounce of weed, they can transport it, they can purchase it, they can obtain it, they can give it away to persons 21 years or older, as long as there's no money involved, okay? That's the bottom line. And also they can have 8 grams of hash, concentrated cannabis, which is also legal in California for adults over 21. Prop 64 does the other thing we talk about later on about reductions of misdemeanors of people previously been convicted, which is a very important point to people out there that might not be aware of that. If anybody out there has been convicted of a felony marijuana offense, you can get that reduced to a misdemeanor now, in some cases destroyed entirely, set aside completely the conviction under some circumstances. So be aware of that. We're going to talk further about that later in the program about Where do you live? What might make a difference? Anyway, let's go on with this. Persons who have open containers in a vehicle while driving or operating a car, 250 fine. Persons possessed to smoke marijuana products upon the school grounds, that's $100 fine. Manufacturing, of course, is still a volatile substance, which if you manufacture hash by using butane, you still face 3, 5, or 7 years in prison. So you guys out there think you can manufacture hash with using butane or other volatile substance, you better wake up and smell the roses, because they're really down on that because people do blow themselves up and blow up houses and put innocent people in jeopardy of being hurt as well. So be aware, this using butane is a very dangerous thing to do, number one. And number two is they don't take a good look at that. They're upset by this, and I can understand why. To try to bring it home, that do not do that. When smoking just marijuana products while driving, that's a $250 fine plus penalty assessment.
Let me interrupt you right there. We have another caller on the line. Okay. Jack from Contra Costa, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello?
Hello, Contra Costa. We're in.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you about a certain problem. I'm in unincorporated Contra Costa County, and this is actually a fairly conservative county, and they have decided not to decide on allowing any growing, even though it might be the state law, the local constituency that in the end allows growing or not. And they have, I think, essentially done nothing and made a decision that way to have it illegal to actually be able to legally grow.
Well, the bottom line is you can grow marijuana as an adult, 21 or older, in your residence, 6 live plants, and they can do nothing about that. You also can, whatever you grow, you can keep, and so that ounce can be much more, because whatever you grow in your home, you can keep, and that's part of the product you can have legally. Matter of fact, I want to caution people out there, if you're growing weed, make sure in your home that you keep the root balls to prove that you maybe grew more than that ounce, maybe from previous season or previous grow. So you can, they can't overturn that right to grow weed in your own home. However, the cities and counties have the authority under the land use rights to exclude or ban cultivation and dispensaries, et cetera, et cetera. That's evident by the laws that came down several years ago. Now, there's one issue I was just talking about earlier on the phone before we got on, and that's the issue, what about patients? Patients in California can grow any amount that's reasonably necessary for their current medical needs under the Prop 215. Prop 215 was a Compassionate Use Act to pass in 1996 that said patients and their caregiver can grow marijuana for their current medical needs. Well, that hasn't changed. So, but the issue becomes, if that's true and you can grow any amount that you want that's reasonably necessary, do those local regulations somehow deny you the right to defend yourself on that ground if the local regulations say you cannot have more than the six plants that's authorized under Prop 64? So you're open to that problem. But generally, these cities and counties have a right to deny cultivation. There's a case called Fresno versus Kirby that established that. And before that, there was another case called Inland Empire case that said that they could preclude people from having dispensaries. So these land use rights have made a big problem for us. Each city and county has an autonomy to decide whether they're going to allow any licensing. And out of the 540 different cities we have, and many counties, probably, I can't remember the number right now, each have their own rules. So it's making things very confusing and very unfair and very unjust in my mind. So there's a lot of things about Prop 64 that I'm not happy with and like to see some changes made somehow in the future. And we'll talk about that later on if you have any further questions.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you say that, because from the research I had done, for instance, going on to the Normal website, the Contra Costa County unincorporated is red, saying it's not allowed, you're not allowed to grow. So I take heart in what you say, but I don't know if that applies in my area.
No, you can grow up to, you can grow 6 plants in your home as an adult, period, if you're over 21 in your home. They cannot do anything about that.
All right.
They can't preclude you from growing outside your property. They can even preclude you from doing greenhouses. They can charge you with local violation of the land use right legislation that subjects you to fines and subjects you to have your marijuana taken away and all the other things they could do for seizing marijuana and destroy it. So it's not good, but it's what is.
Thanks for the information.
Jack, thank you for joining us.
Goodbye.
Mr. Margolin, you spoke a few minutes ago about looking at older convictions and the like. What process applies to getting release for those that may have been sentenced before and may still be languishing? What?
Well, Prop 64, and I've gotten people straight out of prison on Prop 64 motions. Prop 64, again, provides for anybody who's been convicted of a marijuana case, felonies inclusive, can reduce those matters to misdemeanors, okay? And you do that by filing a motion before the court. There are exceptions to that. Under certain circumstances, you have serious priors. Those don't count. If your prior involved any minors, like children, they could exclude you from getting that reduction. If your prior involved sending it out of state, that also could be a problem for that kind of motion. And if you have serious prior convictions, that's a problem, or sex offenses. Other than that, you can reduce these felonies and misdemeanors, and in some cases get them dismissed entirely.
There are some places in the state that are actually taking a proactive view and acting on their own. Can you give us a little bit?
Up in San Francisco, some time ago, they realized they only had like 64 people actually making motions to reduce them. And so the district attorney decided to take it on their own to go through these files and make these motions themselves and reduce these cases to misdemeanors. I'm not sure what they're doing about actually dismissing them, though, which is also possible, but they are reducing the misdemeanors also in San Diego. But unfortunately, our DA in Los Angeles, Jackie Lacey, she's taken the view, no, she ain't got time to do that. So we have thousands of people here that have them come forward without realizing they have an opportunity to produce these to Prop 64. So they can either hire lawyers like myself, some of them go back to the public defender's office. They also are doing that for their clients who approach them. And so please remember that, guys. Get those felonies off your record. Matter of fact, Prop 64 doesn't simply reduce it. It actually is what's called retroactive, meaning it goes back to as if Prop 64 existed 20 or 30 years ago. And at that time, if you had had marijuana, it would only be a misdemeanor. In many cases, it would be a dismissal entirely because it was legal.
Again, you're listening to our topic tonight, Marijuana from the Jail to the Workplace. My guest tonight is criminal defense attorney, marijuana expert attorney, Bruce Margolin, the author of The Margolin Guide to Marijuana Law. If you have questions for my guest, our number here in studio, toll-free, is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And I'm also going to take a moment. I'm pleased to be able to announce to you the return of our Call a Lawyer program. Next week, we will be answering calls off the air as well as on the air with some of the people that you've come to know over many years of volunteering for this station and answering your calls and giving you advice. Sal Timpano from San Francisco on landlord-tenant. Ron Rohde on lemon law, intellectual property, aviation law. Catherine Ray Wong, certified specialist in trust and estate planning. And Frank Adam, who will be talking to you, available for your calls for such questions as tax law or real estate. That will be returning into service next week. I'm pleased to announce that. And our topic tonight is about marijuana. And let me ask you, Mr. Margolin, one of the things you mentioned earlier is about, you mentioned about smoking marijuana while in a car. What direction is this taking in terms of driving under the influence while impaired with marijuana? Are there tests for that right now? Is there any special penalty?
No, the laws said Prop 64 said they did not change the laws regarding driving impaired. Now remember, that's what we're talking about, being impaired, not under the influence. Impairment means you're unable to operate a motor vehicle safely. And what's really important about this, and I'm glad you brought it up, I want people to understand and know that they do not have to or not required to take the field sobriety tests. They're not required to answer questions about when you last smoked, where are you going, and what are you doing. They should not answer those questions because the cops twist those answers into incriminating statements. Also, when they ask you, would you get out of the car and take a field sobriety test, walk the line, touch your nose, that's just setting you up for failure, because I don't care if you're completely straight. Out in the street, you're very nervous, maybe there's traffic going by, late at night or early in the morning, it just isn't a fair way to give a test on the street. And of course, it's also subject to the subjective view of the police officer of how you performed, and that leaves a tremendous amount of leeway for their conclusions, and that's how they screw you when it comes time to to go to court and convict you was based upon what you did on those field sobriety tests, or maybe what you said. Now, also, understand you are required to take a blood, bless, or urine test if demanded from you. That's only after they had a right to arrest you. Once they arrest you, if you don't take that test, you'll lose your license for a year for failure to take the test. So you really need to take the chemical test, which is a blood, breath, or urine test. Otherwise, you are subjected to losing your license. And also, it's considered a refusal. And if you go to trial, the jury would be instructed that refusing is also a consciousness of guilt. In other words, you knew you were guilty. That's why you wouldn't want to take it. So the jury's going to consider that. So again, taking those field sobriety tests is probably the worst thing you can do, because it's very tough to pass those tests. Number two is the cop can make up his own mind how you did. And number three is that's how they have probable cause to arrest you and then demand the blood test. So, to clarify
for our listeners, when you talk about field sobriety tests, you're talking about whether it's walking a line or touching your nose or all those things you do at the side of the road.
That's right. And you're not required to do that because those are supposed to be consensual. They put it in terms of make it sound like you have to do it. But remember, it's only pursuant to your consent. And you have to be very polite to a police officer. Always remember that, because they do have the keys of the jail and the guns on their hips. So besides that, they have a lot of power. That's your first phase of prosecution, is meeting a cop on the street. Be polite, be kind, don't be rude, but make yourself clear that you're not taking any field sobriety test because that's the option you have.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights. Again, our topic tonight is marijuana, from the jail to the workplace. We'll be returning momentarily. Our topic next week is going to be family law. We'll be joined in studio by our guests B.J. Fatum and Janet Frankel, both certified family law specialists. And as I mentioned moments ago, while we are here in the studio on air, you will also have the ability to speak to our experts answering the phones moments ago. We've already lined up Sal Timpano, Ron Rohde, Catherine Ray Wong, and Frank Adam. There are more to come. This is Your Legal Rights. And we'll be returning in a moment. And Mr. Margolin, when we return, I'm going to start talking about non-criminal aspects of marijuana law. We're going to take a break in a moment, but I would like to start when we come back and learn about employment law, learn about when an employer can subject you to tests, what they can do about it if you're using off the job, perhaps not under the influence, but you're testing dirty. This is Your Legal Rights, and we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or in Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. And a big thanks to all our listeners who have contributed to KALW's spring membership campaign. You have all brought us within $10,000 of our overall campaign goal of $400,000. Today is the last day in which contributions count toward the overall total. And we welcome your support as we close in on our goal. Go to kalw.org if you'd like to contribute. kalw.org. And thanks.
And again, if you have a question for my guest, you can call us toll-free here in the studio at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. Mr. Margolin, we were talking about the criminal aspects that have changed, but one of the aspects people don't associate as readily has to do with keeping your job.
A big problem, this is the situation right now, okay? Prop 64 did not change the so-called rights of employers to neither hire people that use marijuana and or fire them. And there's many employers taking great advantage of that right now because a lot of these people are older that are using weed and they're subject to getting their retirements in the near future. So it's a great opportunity for them to fire them based upon their marijuana use. Now, this is terrible. And they can test you before you take a job, and they can test you while you're on the job, and they can, that's it. They can fire you based on that use of marijuana alone. I would say that, but there was a mention about Cal Normal, that's an organization that I've been involved with since 1973. I'm the director of Normal in Los Angeles, L.A. Normal, since that time. Cal Normal has a bill before the legislature here in California that will change the law regarding in California for medical patients. It's I see the bill number. This is, I got the bill number. It's still pending before the legislature, but what it'll do is it's AB 2069, Assembly Bill 2069. It was introduced in the state legislature by Assemblyman Rob Bonta from Oakland. This bill would specifically bar employers from discriminating against workers because of their status as medical cannabis patients or a positive drug test for medical cannabis. So the point is that if you're a patient, then you could be protected under this new legislation that we hope will get passed. It's just still pending. We have a long way to go. But with any luck, we'll get this through the legislature, and at least we'll protect patients from being fired.
But as it is now, even a medical marijuana patient with a physician's recommendation can be fired for testing for marijuana, testing positive?
Go ahead. Yes, that's true. And unfortunately, it's different in some states. And many states have taken a different view of this and have not allowed patients to be subjected to being fired or denied employment because of medical use. And unfortunately, California has had in place that allows them to do that and hasn't been changed, but the time has come, and Normal's leading the bandwagon to get that done. So keep that in mind. As a matter of fact, the people out there that are interested in your own butts, excuse the expression, and others, check out AB 2069, and if any of your legislators are on any of the committees that are involved with that, please call them up and tell them how you ask them to AB 2069.
Doug from San Francisco, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Margolin, a quick question, backtracking a little bit to the issue of possession. What about when you cross state line, not just in an automobile, but let's say you fly to New York. Are you allowed to take marijuana with you?
This is a situation on that, okay? Number one is you transport state marijuana out of state, it's considered not a misdemeanor, especially if you're ounce, okay? Now, in California, and I've noted that just recently, the LA Times called me about this issue and brought to my attention the fact that what's going on. If you're on an airplane, for example, and you're flying to San Francisco from L.A. and you have less than an ounce of marijuana, they will take it from you. They'll turn over to the local police, but they won't do anything about it because it's legal. But if you're flying out of state with anything over an ounce, it could be considered a felony, not reduction to a misdemeanor, because we're particularly concerned about having people ship weed out of the state. So keep that in mind. If you're taking more than an ounce, you're taking a big problem chance with it, and it is against the law.
What if you're taking less than an ounce?
Well, you know, it's technically it's legal in California to have up to an ounce transported, you know, for your personal medical needs. So I've had no cases like that have come to my attention. I don't know how many people out there have been stopped and whether they took their weed transporting it from one state to another. But whenever you go to the other state, they can certainly prosecute you when you get there if they don't allow marijuana to be in their state. And transporting across states sucks as far as potential problems. And I know it's a bummer to start looking around for your herb when you get to some location where you're not sure where you're going to get it and how you're going to get it, and you don't want to go back in the back alleys any longer. But this is an area that is clearly said that they don't want you to transport it out of state, because this is one of the concerns about getting Prop 64 passed. Everybody's going to be concerned about people bringing it to different states. So the bottom line is, my argument is, you can transport up to an ounce in California. And so it's for personal medical use. You should not be subjected to any crime. But if it's over an ounce, then you could be subjected for over an ounce. You know?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Doug, thank you for joining us. And Roy from San Mateo, you're in Your Legal Rights.
Hello?
Roy, welcome. You're in Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, I have a question. back in 1999, I got convicted of a felony for transportation of marijuana from Mexico to San Diego County. And I'd like to know if there's any way. I've never had any issues after that. Is there anything that I can do about it to get it off my record?
Well, Prop 64, let me tell you what Prop 64 says. It says basically, let me give you the details on Prop 64 about reduction to misdemeanors, okay? Let me just pull out of my guide. By the way, as mentioned earlier, I put out this guide on marijuana laws, and I put it out for 21 years. Every year I've been putting it on the street because it really gives you the nitty-gritty about what the laws are and how to avoid problems, which if you know the laws. You can get it online free at the present time by going to my website, 420laws.com, 420laws.com. So let me tell you about Prop 64 reductions. I'm looking at my guide to make sure I don't make any mistakes about how it reads. I don't want people to be confused about it. So give me a moment to look it up here, okay? Hold on.
Yeah, no problem.
Roy, as he's looking at that, let me ask you, were you convicted in a state court or a federal court?
State court. And I was actually a passenger in the car. I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
Well, I know that... Pardon me? What happened? You're driving in a car, right?
He was a passenger in a car, he just said.
That sucks. And if we could think, where was it? Was it in the trunk or was it in the passenger compartment?
It was in a compartment.
Oh, did you cop out or did you go to trial?
I'm sorry?
Did you plead guilty or did you go to trial?
I went to trial, but it was a really short trial. I was really young back then, had no clue what was going on in court, and basically just accepted whatever they charged me with.
That was in San Diego, right?
Correct, San Diego.
Okay, well, but I'm not sure about the moment. I apologize. I should know all this stuff better, but I'm not sure that if you import, whether you could still be reduction on the Prop 64. I can look that up right now. I'm looking at it. But I know if you're exporting it, that's part of the preclusion for people that are being able to reduce the misdemeanor. But let me tell you something. You got no problem trying because the record of conviction is what they have to use to be able to decide whether they're going to allow you to do it. And the record of conviction might not include how much weight you had. Who knows what happened in that case? You know, I don't know what happened in that case. And they got to be able to find it. They might not even have the files anymore or might not have enough information to make a decision as to whether or not you can actually get this reduction under Prop 64. So you got no reason not to try. It's not going to hurt you, okay? Got it?
Okay.
Hold on, I was saying something here. I'm trying to look this up for you at the moment. But you can go online at 420laws.com. And look at my guide. I'm trying to figure out what page it's on because, you know, what's been happening. This is the third edition I put out this year on my guide because things change constantly in this business, unfortunately, you know. That's the nature of the beast in the first place in law because cases come down from the Court of Appeals, for example, or legislations change things, and that makes a problem. Now, different, though, is when we have something like an initiative, like on a Prop 64, that can't be changed by initiative, by strength. That can't be changed by legislation. It can only be changed by a new initiative. So Prop 64 is like cement, you know, like it's like chiseled in cement. It is something that can't be changed unless we get a new initiative, except in certain areas, for example, this thing about employment law, whether or not they can change the California law regarding firing people for using marijuana, and we can because Prop 64 didn't specifically set out the fact that it can't be done. So that's why we expect to get around that problem. Anyway, check it out. Give me a call at my office. I'll be glad to look it up more carefully for you. You can call me at 1-800-420-LAWS, 1-800-420-LAWS, and I'll give you a heads up and let you know what the status is, okay?
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
And Roy, if you have the ability to do it, it would be very helpful to know what you actually were convicted of. If it was a conspiracy, it may lead to a little different answer than if you were convicted of importation or possession for sale or something of that nature.
Okay. Yeah, I'll look it up and get that information.
Well, give me a call and I'll look it up for you to make sure I'm on game with that, okay? I'm still looking for my guy. Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate the fact that you called in, and I regret that I don't have that specific answer. I'm suspicious that you may have a problem because you're importing it, unfortunately, under Prop 64. But like I say, you can't hit the ball unless you swing the bat. It's not going to be a big problem filing a motion, so don't hesitate, okay?
Okay. Well,
Rory, best of luck, and thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Margolin, one of the things we haven't talked about are some of the collateral consequences or things that happen, not necessarily from a conviction, but just having the police contact. Talk a little bit about forfeiture and how that might still exist or how it's changed.
It hasn't changed. They can still forfeit your property and things of that nature if you're convicted of certain offenses. But in California, I haven't seen any forfeiture cases coming down at all regarding marijuana. It was some time in the past when that was happening, and the feds were doing it in some occasions, but like I said, I haven't seen many of that at all. You know, that the laws generally, that the forfeiture laws allow the state and federal government to seize money and property that the proceeds are used in the facilitating a drug activity. And the forfeiture proceedings are filed separately from the criminal charges, and generally we're stuck with that. And so they can forfeit your property if you're using it for drug activity. And motor vehicle forfeitures also can be taken from you if you're transporting dope, but I don't see it happening. How about you? Have you seen much of that?
I haven't seen much in the way of property or cars.
Yeah.
What I usually see in forfeiture cases is cash.
Yeah.
Usually the cash that somebody may have around. So if somebody is buying or selling large quantities of drugs, they tend to have a lot of cash, and it tends to be a very expensive proposition when they are arrested. And the money that they would have paid for their defense, their bail, whatever it may be, is gone without a trial, without due process. And if you fight the forfeiture, which you have every right to do, and when they serve you forfeiture papers, they tend to give you the paperwork including how to fight the forfeiture. The problem is you have a criminal case coming down the pipeline, and in order to go after the forfeiture, you're putting yourself in that place. You're making admissions, maybe not confessions. So it's a problem.
And also, when you go to put bail up, you put cash bail up, you better watch out. You're going to end up getting that bail forfeited by the deceased. You got to be careful of that. And by the way, I'm going back to this Prop 64. I see my guide says that the exceptions to having the reductions is transporting out of state, not in state. If you have violation of environmental laws, prior sex offenses, serious or prior violent felonies, and marijuana convictions involving minors, it says transporting out of state. It doesn't say in state, as far as I can tell from the law. So that gentleman that called just now, his case busted down in San Diego, he should definitely go for it.
And again, you'll be potentially hearing from Roy in San Mateo with regard to that. One of the collateral consequences that is always a big concern to any criminal defense attorney is the consequences that may befall an immigrant.
Yes, that's a big problem. If you're not a citizen, and I don't care if you've got a green card or not, that don't mean you're a citizen. Doesn't mean you're protected. A green card doesn't protect you. The bottom line is you can and will be deported if you're convicted of anything involving more than 30 grams of marijuana. So people have got to be heads up on that, okay? That's a very dangerous proposition for non-citizens. And some of these people have been here 20, 30 years with their green cards and think they're golden, but they're not. They cannot have marijuana in their possession or transported or otherwise over 30 grams.
And again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights. If you have a question for Mr. Margolin or myself, our number, toll-free, is 866-798-8255. And again, that's 866-798-8255. Our topic again tonight is on marijuana, from the jail to the workplace. So how does one avoid getting a conviction, even for a small amount? Any ideas for some alternatives or some strategies that might be employed?
Well, small amounts, if that's an ounce, they've got no problem. It's legal. I don't know what circumstances you're talking about. If it's possessed for sale, I mean, you got to fight the fight. I mean, you got to, first of all, they got to prove the quantity was consistent with sale, and you have a right to put on your own argument about why it wasn't. That's obviously an issue in all these possession for sale cases. Cultivation of over six plants is still a misdemeanor, and it's tough to say you weren't cultivating if they actually bust you for it. But let me tell you, the DAs don't want to go to trial in these cases. They want to make all kinds of deals because, number one, is they're not sure of the jury pool any longer. The jury pool would be so pissed sitting around for a week in a trial over a marijuana case, they might just vote for the defendant just because they want to punish the public, the prosecutor, for putting them through the hassle. So they can negotiate in ways that maybe avoid these convictions. For example, maybe they can get a disturbing the peace out of it or some other non-issue when it comes to citizens' problems. So that's one way. And of course, there's questions of illegal search and seizure. Prop 64 specifically says the smell of marijuana and is not probable cause to search. Now, that's pretty extraordinary because the cops have been using that smell as a number one tool to bust people and to get into their homes and get into their personal possessions and find whatever else they can. So Prop 64 explicitly says that the smell of marijuana is no longer probable cause. It's not considered contraband. Marijuana is not contraband. However, if it's in a car, because of the fact that there's violations of driving with marijuana or possessing in the car with an open container, if they smell marijuana, most courts are concluding that they have a right then to look for that marijuana to see if it's a violation of that particular infraction. So that hasn't been tested in the Court of Appeals yet. I filed a couple of motions in cases similar to that kind of condition, and the DA gave them up, but I don't know how it's going to pan out when the Court of Appeals comes up with an issue like that. A cop smells weed in the car and finds 20 pounds under the back seat. The court's going to say, is that going to be okay? They can search that far, even though it may not be over-announced when they've actually looked for it. My argument would be that unless they know it's over-announced, they can't look for anything other than over-announced, and so the mere smell without having any conclusion about the quantity should preclude them from making searches and seizures.
But you still see that taking place today, do you not?
You see it all day long. The cops are stopping people and smelling the weed and seizing it, you know, giving them tickets. Or worse.
We've talked so far about adults. Talk a little bit about adults that aren't yet 21. So they're facing adult consequences or an adult court, but they're not of age to where they could lawfully possess marijuana. Where do they sit?
Well, first of all, let's talk about 18 to 21. 28 grams or less or 4 grams of concentrated cannabis shall be guilty of an infraction for people 18 to 21, which is kind of crazy, and that's a $100 fine for them, less than someone over 21. Isn't that strange? That's crazy. It's a guilty of an infraction only, punishable by a fine of not more than $100 plus penalty assessment.
Pretty similar to where adults were before the proposition passed.
Yes, but no, but I'm talking about over. I'm talking about over-announce.
Over-announce, okay.
Over-announce was a misdemeanor, okay? Now, more than 28 grams or more than 4 grams of concentrated cannabis by someone 18 to 21 shall be punished in a county jail for 6 months or a fine of $500, like adults. Juveniles under 18 with not more than 28 grams or more than 4 grams of concentrated cannabis upon finding the first offense has been committed, must complete 4 hours of drug education program or counseling and up to 10 hours of community service over a period of 60 days. So all they can do to them is make them do some counseling, no jail time. The second offense for people under 21 and subsequent offenses committed must complete 6 hours of drug education program and up to 20 hours of community service in a period within 90 days. Now, more than 28 grams or not more than 4 grams of concentrated cannabis, the first offense is similar, as I've just spoken about possession. But this initiative is inconsistent, though. The limits regarding marijuana and cannabis concentrates allowing possession up to 8 grams for adults and 4 grams for juveniles is a little bit unclear by why that came out that way, okay? Section numbers 11362.1 penalizes more than 4 grams, but why 11357A, B, and C and 11C60 allow for 10 grams. So that might be have to be fleshed out or new legislation or something that's going to have to straighten that out. But basically, kids under 21, they are in better shape than the adults are that are over 21. And juveniles don't have to stress too much about weed in their possession because all they face is things like community service, etc. But on the other hand, you know, we're not here promoting marijuana use by anybody. We're promoting the laws to be changed to, you know, have the right to make choices. But when it comes to juveniles' use of marijuana, it seems to be the conclusion of most people, subjectively, there aren't many studies, that it does not the same, it might impair their learning ability to some degree because of the effects of short-term memory loss and things of that nature. And it's also they're developing their minds and their brains. This could affect that development in some way, which hasn't been decided yet and hasn't been scientifically proven, but it's something to keep aware of, and please be careful about making that choice before you become 18 or more.
And one of the things that we're not going to spend a lot of time on, but in addition to the criminal penalties, remember that when you have convictions for any drug-related offense, young people should be aware there's a lot of federal aid you could be losing in the future, such as student aid, welfare, when you may take a turn in life that you hadn't expected, all sorts of things that you're jeopardizing. So don't make those decisions lightly, folks.
Although I still think the federal laws are going to fall like the Berlin Wall someday soon, okay? I still think it's going to happen, notwithstanding Sessions or other people in the Republican Party that might not be down for it, because I think they realize that they must do something different because their families, their friends, their relatives, and even the people in the Congress and other places are using this medical use of marijuana, and they got to know that it's a real deal, okay? And it's a beautiful drug, it's a beautiful substance that not only should have the right that people make that choice for themselves, but it is very helpful in all kinds of medical conditions that everybody knows out there. So it'll fall, but it sucks right now, and ain't pretty, and it's still in conflict and makes people nervous.
Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights. We're talking about marijuana laws, marijuana from the jail to the workplace. Our phone number, toll-free, is 866-798-8255. Again, 866-798-8255. We still have a couple of minutes if you want to get that last call in. The last thing I wanted to touch on tonight was the medical marijuana laws. Now, they still exist in parallel, and there are some applications for the medical marijuana that might not apply elsewhere. What would you like to tell us about the Compassionate Use Act?
Well, it still exists. It was passed in 1995, and again, it provided for patients and their caregivers to grow marijuana and to possess marijuana for their current medical needs. That law...
215?
Yeah, 215. Sorry about that. It did not specify the amount that they could grow or possess. But we have this one case, People versus Kelly. It came down from the Court of Appeals and says any amount that's reasonably necessary for the current medical needs of the patient is permissible and protected under Prop 215. Now, as I've cautioned earlier, we don't know how that's going to pan out in the Court of Appeals when local jurisdictions have different rules about that, but most people are confident that the Prop 215 that says you have a right to have possession and cultivation, and Prop 64 that says that they're not in any way changing Prop 215 should protect patients to have amounts that are reasonably consistent with their needs. Now, in my guide, which I put out, I have all the cases that are relevant to medical marijuana cases, the Court of Appeals, the appellate landmark cases, and there's about 25 of them that are very important for people to look at to understand the intricacies of marijuana by patients, okay? But... And I gave one example that's very important about people, okay, that understand the law. They say, well, what difference does it make? I'll give you the case, it's People versus Wayman, that came down from the Court of Appeals some time ago. In this case, Mr. Wayman, a young kid, said he had some weed in his car, 4 ounces of marijuana and some hash, and he went to trial, and it was conceded it was medical marijuana. No one questioned it. He had a recommendation, but he testified and he kept it in his car because his mother didn't like it in the house. And the Court of Appeals sustained his conviction, saying that you cannot store marijuana in your vehicle. You only can transport marijuana for your current medical needs. The Court of Appeals said further, had he been traveling extensive distances, he could have probably had 4 ounces for the medical use for that purpose. But again, be careful what you say. Don't talk to police officers if you can avoid it. Stand on your rights. Be polite. Tell them you wish not to talk about anything at this time. The right to speak to a lawyer. And you may save yourself from saying something that's going to hurt you. And if you get a chance to look at my guide, you'll see on all the late cases that are relevant. For example, the one that I just laid out to you as being important to be aware of, because people say the wrong thing and that's all it takes to be in trouble. So keep that in mind. Well, right now, people can still grow marijuana as patients. They can have five members of a caretaker or caregiver. You can have five patients. Only one can live out the county, but you can have five patients in your group of people that you care for. Now, caregiver is also a very specialized definition of the law. Caregiver. Now, in a case called Buford v. Mensch, they describe what a caregiver is. Number one, a caregiver has to consistently assume responsibility for the patient's health, safety, or welfare. And that has to exist before you provide the marijuana. And number two, that word consistent is the important part. You can't say, well, I go by Joe's house and once in a while when I got some weed in the backyard. No, that's not what you have to do. You have to consistently take care of that patient in some way other than just providing marijuana. And you have to do that before you provided the marijuana, and it has to be consistent. The leading case was a case where a guy came up from Southern California, used to visit his buddy in San Francisco, who was a patient. He conceded the fact that he was his caregiver, but he wasn't consistent in providing the care, and the court said that excludes him from making that claim that he was protected under the law.
And with that, I think that's going to be the last word we have on the topic as we're running out of time. Do you have anything you want to say in the last few seconds?
It's been an honor and privilege to be able to be on your program. It's been a great honor and privilege for me to defend more marijuana cases than any lawyer in the United States of America. And thank goodness my practice has changed extensively. I'm now licensing people for these same things they were doing a year ago that was a crime. Now they get a license that can make $1 zillion in the licensing business. Am I happy about Prop 64? Not really. It excluded a lot of cottage people, the cottage businesses. I'd like to see that all change. But at least people are not going to jail like they used to. And for me, it's an enlightening time. And I feel very rewarded by the fact that all the people that participated in changing these laws have been successful to the degree we have right now. But nevertheless, stay cool, know the law, know your rights, and stay free.
Thank you. And again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights. Our guest tonight has been renowned marijuana law and criminal defense attorney Bruce Margolin out of Beverly Hills. We'll be returning next week where we'll be talking about family law, and we will resume our Call a Lawyer program again next week. Thank you for joining us. This has been Your Legal Rights. My name is Jeff Hayden.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or in Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.